Thank you, Ryan Burroughs. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, a Monday afternoon, and a little dreary at that, but we're all still enjoying the snowfall. At least I know Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke from Chicago Inno are. They're in the studio. Welcome, Inno boys. How are you guys?
Hey, Steve. How are you?
Doing good.
You got your snow shoveling over for the weekend?
Oof, I'm not ready to get into, like, full-blown winter weather yet.
It's December 5th for you. It's time.
I know. I'm just not ready yet.
Okay.
Oh, so, I was snow angels all day yesterday.
Yeah, but, well, okay, we'll just leave that. Okay, one of the things that happened just as you guys were walking across the Michigan Avenue Bridge to talk to me was this food truck ruling. And we talk about, you know, startups, disruptors, and things like that. The food truck's been around for a few years, but they're still sort of fighting the bricks and mortars in some ways, and the Cook County Court, a circuit court judge, dealt them a pretty big blow today. They'd been in court on this suit for 4 years.
Yeah, 4 years. The city, this is a fight over two big pieces of regulation, one being food trucks can't be within 200 feet of a restaurant, and the other being that you have to move every 2 hours. You can't just park in a spot and be there all day. And, yeah, the food trucks, which we cover because they are startups. These are entrepreneurs.
Sure.
Even Eastman and Egg has raised a lot of venture capital, started as a food truck and now has a couple pop-up retail locations. And, yeah, I mean, it's funny. Steve, you and I were just talking back and forth. The having to move every 2 hours seems like regulation for the sake of regulation. I can get why an entrepreneur feels like the deck is being stacked against them unfairly on that one. The not parking within 200 feet seems fair just on the surface here. I don't want to get myself in trouble, but I don't know. It's too bad they went 0 for 2, but one seems fair to me and one doesn't.
It'd be kind of rough if you were opened up a bagel shop and a bagel truck pulled up in front of your shop every day and sat there for 4 or 5 hours. I get that.
Make better bagels, I guess.
Adam Smith is in the house.
Give me all the food trucks. I'm a pro food truck guy. I'll take your food trucks wherever you got them.
But look around. I mean, we're here, right? Like, look, there is a lot of places to park that's not in front of retail. I think that's a fair thing for the city to tell its current business owners. Hey, we got your back on this one.
Right.
I think the 2 hours is making it harder for these startups to succeed.
All right, so bigger picture, does that speak to Chicago as welcoming for startups, or is this an isolated event? I mean,
that's a good question. I mean, I think there was compromise made with the being able to cook on the food trucks. That's something that happened. So that's why you see food trucks. I mean, food trucks, again, aren't in every city in the country. So that is something that Chicago, you know, we do have food trucks. You can go to any major business district during lunchtime and you can see a line of them. So I think that's the state of things. Seems like if you're too startup friendly, it's a tough climate to operate in. So I think the fact that the city makes compromises is a compliment.
All right, that's Will Flanagan, the general manager, the managing editor of Chicago Inno, the owner, the publisher, managing editor, right?
And, GM.
GM. Are you GM?
Yeah. Okay. That's the title, Steve. It's been for the past 2 years.
I know. And owner of Inno's brick-and-mortar bagel shop.
It took me a year to get Chicago Inno correct.
That's true.
Jim Dahlke has no title whatsoever, really, and yet he comes over anyway. Tell me, Jim, about this. You wrote the story about this trunk club for kids startup in Chicago. Just tell me about it, because I think I have an issue.
Okay, so the startup is called Runchkins, and basically it is exactly what you said, trunk club for kids. So it is a subscription box service. They've got stylists on hand. They'll pick some clothes for your child based on what you give them for recommendations on what types of clothes they want. They will send you a box. You pick what you like. You send back what you don't, only paying for what you keep.
Right, the difference which is fairly typical.
Yes, the Mac and Mia, another startup in Chicago doing something kind of similar for kids' clothes. They have an interesting sort of twist on the model. They will actually buy back the used kids' clothes from you, giving you store credit so you can kind of keep coming back and buying clothes for your next kid, buying clothes for your kids as they get older. So it's an interesting model. in the sense that all these e-commerce startups, most of them have no problem getting one customer. Getting the customer for the first time, they offer crazy promo codes, discounts, they got you once. A lot of these startups have a hard time keeping that customer, right. And this is a built-in incentive to do that.
Okay, so I guess it makes a little sense. First of all, they're not giving you cash, they're giving you credit, which is fair. You buy more clothes from them. But then they say they're buying these gently used clothes for 10 to 20% of what you paid.
Correct.
That seems kind of low.
Yeah, I mean, it depends on whether you want, 10 to 20% or nothing. If you're, right. How else are you sort of, going back and giving those clothes?
I guess that's true.
You could donate those clothes, or you get a little bit of money back, or you could throw them away, or give them to a sibling.
Giving your sister's kids, they never appreciated it.
Exactly.
Anyway.
So now, what's eventually going to happen as this startup grows, they're going to have more inventory on the resale side, and where they hope to have like a 50-50 split between what they sell new and what they sell used.
All right, we got to take a quick break, and we're a little backed up, but I want to talk about this new video toothbrush and 50 on Fire coming up this week.
Yes, this Thursday.
Just ahead on the Business Lunch. 12:22, it's the Business Lunch on 720 WG. And Will Flanagan and Jim Dahlke are in the studio, as they are most Monday afternoons from Chicago, talk about innovative stories and disruptors in tech world in Chicago. And Dahlke, you start with this one, because I think you wrote the story about this new toothbrush that incorporates Bluetooth and video. So you're seeing the inside of your mouth as you brush or after you brush. What's up with that?
That's right, yes. So this is a real-time video of your brushing with a toothbrush that has a built-in camera. So this is a Chicago startup called Onvi, and it's got a toothbrush called Profix. And what it does is it kind of looks like a regular electric toothbrush. It's got a camera inside, and it's pointed directly at the inside of your mouth. So what you do is you take your smartphone, prop it up, put it right on your bathroom counter, and you can watch your brushing.
So you're watching yourself brush. Have you seen it?
I've seen a video of it. I haven't seen it in person, but I got a video online. And, the tech is pretty cool. Your mouth is gross, but it's showing
you. Hey, man, your mouth is gross.
But it's showing you really where the problem areas are, so you can really see in the back of your mouth. And it shows you still images over time, so you can see,
wow,
I've been using the toothbrush for 6 months. This is how my teeth have changed over that six-month period.
I'm just thinking of lighting. How does it work?
Yeah, I mean, don't brush your teeth in the dark. I definitely would turn the light on in the bathroom.
So you're back in the back, it still can see everything.
So it sees everything pretty well, actually. So the video looks pretty good. The pictures are pretty interesting to kind of see how people's mouths change over time. But it's in retail right now, or it's in pre-order, and it's going to retail for about $3.99.
Okay, so you guys know me well enough, and Flanagan sends the story to me and says, he knows I'm going to make fun of it. And, well, I was inclined to, but it sounds kind of cool. If you're going to track yourself and watch, I guess.
Well, it's from a dentist who actually used video during his own sort of cleanings for his own patients, and it really helped him and his patients understand like what their teeth are looking like. So he's like, I want to bring this to the masses.
Yeah, this isn't an entrepreneur who just like Googled smart plus product and looking for one thing that hasn't been smartized yet.
Right.
Because you think like everything has a smart equivalent. This is a dentist who used to do this to help his patients, videotaping them out to show, like, this is how you do it, and saw, this works, so why don't I commercialize it? So there is a cool entrepreneur story here, even though it sounds a little silly. Smart toothbrush.
$300.
Yeah, $2.99 for the pre-order, $3.99 once it hits retail.
So that's not for everyone, I would imagine.
No, only somebody who's very, very committed to a clean mouth.
Or who's, doesn't want to be away from a screen anytime.
I was going to be watching something. If you get this gift, though, you have to, second guess it. If someone gave me a $400 toothbrush, do I need a brush my teeth? Do you think I need it this badly?
All right, 50 on Fire's coming up. I think it's Thursday, right?
It's this Thursday, Steve.
Tell me about it.
It is our big event of the year. It's our awards show. Every media company has an awards show, and what makes this unique, we're celebrating 50 of the most innovative people and companies in the city. And, why I think this is different is, there's no one metric that's deciding the 50. There's no, this is for year-over-year revenue growth. We are celebrating innovators in education, in marketing, in tech, in lifestyle.
In big and small.
Big, right? And small.
That's what struck me last year, was that it's not, we think of these 50 on Fire as being small startups or people working in their garage. There's big business here, too.
No, 100%. And that's the point. To really celebrate an innovation economy and what's happening here in the city, it can't just be all CEOs or all founders or all companies that have raised a lot of funding. It has to be the professor who's teaching the entrepreneurship class. It has to be the TA in that entrepreneurship class. It has to be the nonprofit that's teaching STEM education in the South Side. All of these things need to be celebrated on a level playing field, and that's why we kind of love the fact that it is an anecdotal award show. We cover this space as well as anyone in the city. We know who's heating up Chicago innovation, and we want the CEO at Chicago's unicorn tech company next to a student entrepreneur. Like, that's the point of this.
So is it, it's a sort of a program that you watch? I mean, can people go?
Yeah.
I can go and feel really inadequate for.
No. So what we did, we announced 150 finalists 2 months ago. We did a big 3-day photo shoot. We then cut a 15-minute video after kind of sending all of the finalists to 20-plus judges in the city. And at the event, it's a big cocktail party celebrating with everyone who's on Fire. And we will show the video that unveils the 50 winners. So instead of, like, Steve, a 3-hour, like, you're sitting,
right,
falling asleep.
Cinematography, okay, but makeup, 15, are you kidding me?
Yeah, it's 15 minutes. It's an action-packed video. Everyone hoot and hollers, and we're in and we're out.
What surprises you about this thing, Jim?
What surprises me is just the depth of the 150 that we've got here. I mean, the B2B category is obviously very stacked, but the B2C category, we talk about how Chicago's often overlooked at its consumer tech, but, right, like, the level of B2C talent, when you look at companies like Reverb and Spot Hero and Opternative, there are so many, like, really, really interesting B2C companies that there's just, like, you can't go wrong.
Okay, so it is a thing where you can get tickets and go?
Yeah, check it out, ChicagoInno.com. We have a widget right on the site. I would love to see you this Thursday at Lacuna Artist Lofts in Pilsen. Very,
sweet,
very fun venue.
Will Flanagan, Jim Dahlke, great to see you guys.
Thanks. Great to see you, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. Thank you, Ryan Burrow. Steve Bertrand here. It's 12:37. You're listening to the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN. A little bit later in the program, we're going to talk to Rick King. He's the chairman of Kettleman and Associates, with some ideas about how, if you are, well, Donald Trump or a business owner, how you go about transitioning your ownership, your stewardship of your company to your children. Can be a minefield, I'm sure, and we'll talk to Rick about that. And I think, as I read, he actually did it himself. So some advice from a user we'll talk. But Randy Schaefer's in the studio. She writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Randy, welcome back to the Business Lunch.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
We're going to start with Snapchat, Instagram.
Always
do that. I can't.
Well, they are merging to become kind of the same, so
it doesn't help me at all.
Understandable.
I'll still screw it up. But Instagram and the top 10 users of the year have been released, and, well, Selena Gomez is number one.
Yeah, Selena Gomez is number one, and she has actually claimed that spot from this year's number two, last year's number one, her best friend Taylor Swift.
Why, can I just say I've seen Selena Gomez and Taylor Swift in concert, because I'm the owner of a former teenage girl. But what is it about Selena Gomez? What has she done that makes her number one in Instagram?
To be honest, I think it's because she's the age of a lot of these Instagram users. You know, she is in her early 20s, I do believe. She kind of got used to Instagram the same time her fan base was getting used to Instagram. She's grown up a lot with them, coming from Disney Channel into the age of social media and adult trends. And she's taken a lot of her fans with her along the way. So I think it's a combination of her lifestyle, her age, and, of course, she's a very pretty girl.
She is a pretty girl, and pretty girls seem to do pretty well on this list.
They do, yes.
8 of the 10 top 10 are women.
Yes, 8 of the top 10 are women.
I'll go ahead and say they're all pretty.
They are.
The Rock is not so pretty. Well, maybe he is pretty. What is it about The Rock that puts him in at number 8?
To be honest, I couldn't tell you. I actually don't follow The
one,
Rock.
I think.
Yeah, I thought that was kind of strange, too.
Okay, so Instagram is, you mentioned they're merging with Snapchat, but when it comes to all of this, it seems like Instagram is on the way up.
Yeah, Instagram, I guess, not technically merging with Snapchat, but the two of them do have so many similar features, and it's been said quite a bit that Instagram's kind of ripping some of these off of Snapchat, the stories and that sort of thing.
So Instagram is the place to be. Twitter seems to me to be the place to be, especially if you're the president-elect, but big picture, the Snapchat folks kind of look down on Twitter a little bit, right? Is that fair to say?
I wouldn't really say that's fair to say. Snapchat and Twitter are very, very different.
So, okay, let me put it this way. To the Snapchat users, Twitter is your parents' social media.
I can see that, yeah. Twitter does make it a little bit easier to communicate with people versus Snapchat, which is very, very closed. It's hard to find people. You can't search hashtags. Twitter opens up a much broader conversation.
Okay, all of that to get to this new Save You a Trick user on Twitter, which is all about what, fake news? It's like Snopes
fake
for Twitter?
It's like Snopes for Twitter, exactly. I'm not sure if you're familiar with Saved You a Click.
I was reading about it.
Yeah. Saved You a Click's been around for a while, and it's actually a Twitter handle that will retweet these clickbaity kind of headlines, you know, the, and you won't believe what happens
right.
next.
Child stars gone bad.
He'll retweet them and put the spoiler right in the tweet, so you don't have to click it, you know what happened. And so he's back with Saved You a Trick.
Okay, so if I'm BuzzFeed or one of those other sites that relies on that clickbait, I probably don't like this guy very much.
No, you don't. He is stealing all of your clicks, and you are losing your ad revenue because of Saved You a Click and Saved You a Trick.
But it's okay, though, because BuzzFeed is taking advantage of us, BuzzFeed, by making us click to the 10th page to see that Gary Coleman isn't such a great guy or
after
something
you get
like
through
that.
All of those photo slideshows, yes.
All right, so tell me about Saved You a Trick then.
Well, Saved You a Trick, it's kind of like Saved You a Click in that it will retweet these things you see, fake news stories, screenshots, tweets, and will let you know whether or not it's true. So it's kind of a little fact checker that is built into Twitter. And so it will give more context to all of those. And it's just started, so there's only a handful
right.
of tweets, but it'll take, you know, Donald Trump's tweet about the First Amendment and we'll link to a story that has more context to it. So,
well, I mean, here we are on a Monday after a weekend where a guy went into a pizza joint in Washington, D.C. with a gun because of these fake news stories. That's the sort of thing where this guy would have had up a story saying it's not true.
Yeah, absolutely. He would have taken the original story from one of those, you know, InfoWars and would have posted the story with a link that says not true and kind of a Snopes version.
So who's going to read him? Because I'm thinking that a guy who is gullible enough, I'll use that word kindly, to believe the story and go in there with a gun is probably not going to follow this guy.
No, but you never know. And a lot of these stories, they do look very, very convincing. They have very authentic looking websites. They have they're formatted in a way that might lead you to believe that these names entirely made up are real. So maybe it's just a matter of getting this information into the hands of the right people. And I'm not sure if it'll work, but hey, it's worth a try.
Yeah, it is. It's called Saved You a Trick, right? So the it's at Saved You a Trick.
Yep.
If you want to follow them and keep updated on that. You know, I'm old enough to remember when weddings just started having their own Facebook page or their own web page. She laughs at me. And now it's all about Twitter again and these hashtags, right? Every wedding has its own hashtag?
Every wedding has its own hashtag. If it's a 2016 wedding, there's a pretty good chance it has a hashtag attached.
So really? And so what would that hashtag be for?
Well, a lot of couples are electing to pick hashtags for not only their weddings, but their bachelor, bachelorette parties. That way, when guests at the wedding upload photos, upload videos, they can use the hashtag. And the bride and groom and family members can simply click the hashtag to see all of the compiled content in one place.
I like that. And so here comes magazine editor Michelle Wakeham, or Wakeham, with a bright idea, right? She's the hashtag queen of weddings.
Yes, she is. She has created a company called Happily Ever Hashtagged, and the hashtagged is hashtagged.
And she's getting cash for creating hashtags for people's weddings.
Absolutely is. Kind of genius of her. She makes these packages where she helps people come up with hashtags for their weddings and charges packages range between $40 to $115.
Now, so like hashtag Bill and Wendy, that you got to be more creative.
You got to be a little more creative than that.
You had some examples in here. I don't know, or there were in the story. Oh, this is my favorite. Maggie marrying Charlie, hashtag Charmageddon.
Charmageddon. And they had it put on their napkins, their cocktail napkins with a hashtag.
But what I'm thinking is that this is the sort of thing that you have probably just spent a little time and come up with it on your own.
Yeah, I think so. But other people may be, you know, not as creative as a magazine editor. They work in business, they work in consulting, they're working 50-hour work weeks, don't want to put in the time and effort. Might as well spend $40 and have a professional take care
of it. And what the hell, you're dropping $20,000 on the wedding, right?
Exactly, with another $40.
Hashtag. Randy Schaefer writes about social media for the Chicago Tribune. Thanks for coming by today.
Absolutely. Thank you for having me.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN. We're going to hand off your business to your kids coming up next. Thank you very much, Orion Samuelson. Steve Bertrand here. It is the Wintrust Business Lunch on 720 WGN, 1252 on a Monday afternoon. Okay, so it is December 5th, 10 days from today. Donald Trump has promised to have a big news conference where he will reveal how he is transitioning his company, his business, to his kids. And, you know, there are a lot of concerns about conflicts of interest and all of that. And even a story, I think, right now about Ivanka Trump today. So there's that. Donald Trump says he's got a way to do it. And it's the sort of thing, I think, probably that a lot of businesses around Chicago and around the country, sort of thing that they have to deal with as well. Rick King is in the studio. He's the chairman of Kettleman and Associates. And he's actually got his own experience with this. Rick, welcome to the Business Lunch.
Thank you, Steve.
All right. Let's start just with Kettleman. What? Tell me about that company.
Kettleman is an executive search firm that is exclusively in the nonprofit sector. We only do CEOs and executive directors of nonprofits around the country.
Mm-hmm. And so those are big positions.
They are mostly all CEOs of those organizations.
We tend to think of neighborhood charities and things like that, but some of these non-for-profits can be major undertakings.
They are.
How difficult it is to find the right fit?
That's a great question, and that's what we're paid to do, is to find the right fit. We've been doing it for 53 years now, and these are the kinds of organizations that seem to adhere to some of the principles that we like to extend to them.
Well, I don't want to get too far afield, but Donald Trump is choosing a cabinet and is a business leader, generals. So who does he pick? When it comes to finding a CEO for a non-for-profit, a big charity, do they stay within the non-for-profit community, or does a business person make a nice transition into that position?
That can be the case, and in fact, we've recruited many business professionals into the non-profit area. It's not for everyone, but it does fit in certain circumstances. The transition for the president-elect is interesting because there are three of his children that have been
right.
named as possible leaders. In fact, who the answer to the question of who do you turn over the reins to is one of the questions that I think everybody is interested
right,
in.
Right. So your title at Kettleman is chairman. It was CEO not too long ago.
That's correct.
You transitioned to your kids.
That's correct.
Well, that's got to be a difficult thing to do, isn't it?
It is, and it took us 2 years in a very planful way to reach this point, which we just reached in November.
What's harder, the legal part or the emotional part?
Definitely the emotional part. Legal part is pretty much straightforward. The one thing that we I think decided early on is that there was a propensity, just given the background of both of their careers, to be able to step into this role. But I can tell you, Steve, the biggest decision that we looked for was did they get along as children? And hopefully
you've been researching that for their whole lives, right?
That's correct.
Yeah.
And our kids get along. Megan and Corey have been very close as brother and sister, and this makes a difference, particularly when things go wrong. Not so much when things go right, but do they respect each other? Yes, they do. Do they work well on problems? Yes, they do.
I don't want to talk too much about your own kids, right? Because I don't want to put you in that spot.
Right.
But if you are the owner of a company and you've got a couple of kids who might inherit it, there might be one who's better at it than the other,
right,
that you know or that you trust more than the other. How do you handle that?
Oh, another great question, Steve. And I think, first of all, in company-wide decisions, I think I've learned what you tell one kid, you tell all kids. To do otherwise is to run the risk of divisiveness in the company. Do they have an understanding of how what they do in the company affects the company as a whole, all the employees included? And that's a big determination also. But the biggest part is, do you have a plan? And it took us 2 years to reach this point in the transition. And that's what's important as part of making this successful.
I would imagine part of making it successful, too, is being blunt and saying, this is what you can do and this is what you don't do so well.
There are roles that each of the kids play. They're defined. They're discussed. When decisions are made company-wide, we make them together.
Rick King is the chairman of Kettleman and Associates. You transferred control to your kids last month?
That's correct.
How's it going so far, Rick?
Just great. All of my expectations are met.
Well, it's nice to see you. Thanks very much for coming in today.
Thank you, Steve.
It's the Business Lunch on 720 WGN.